Let us introduce the podcast first. Oh my God, so bad at this.
We can do that like first thing this time.
I know. It literally just popped in my head going, no, introduce the podcast. And the thing is, though, I'm going to leave this horrible spiel in first. So welcome back to the Grim Reader podcast, a podcast where we judge each other's books by the front cover and then do a little book review on them. And yeah, I'm Rebecca.
I'm Nikki.
And yeah, it's good that we've introduced ourselves and the podcast because it's been a while.
That never happens. That, yeah. Like, this was an outlier. Young reader, this may never happen again.
The last episode, we forgot about it and then had to do it like either in the middle or towards the end. We were like, oh, sugar, we never actually introduced the thing.
I know. I think we recorded it like literally 3 hours into a Zoom meeting. And I hope you edited it to be towards the beginning of the episode.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally did that. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But I think we're recording this. I think we're actually going to start releasing episodes again. So, you know, this will be like 2 months afterwards, but you'll actually have listened to hopefully some episodes. So we're advanced recording. Woo! But anyway, and a reminder that our schedule is going to be every 2 weeks now because we can't.
Yeah.
We can't manage it the otherwise. End. But any news?
I'm seeing Mitski tomorrow. And this is because this is going to be past tense Nikki speaking. Yes, reader, this is the event that no one could get tickets to except me because of ticket scalpers. I don't know how I did it. Like, I've seen her for 3 times now. Can I also say that when I recommend you music, you should listen to it like when I recommend it, because I've been right about Mitski for a very long time.
Yes.
And you guys are only listening now.
Yes. I can confirm this.
So good. So I managed to get tickets and it was the most stressful thing of my life. I tried to get 4. I only got 2. It sold out in literally 30 seconds. It's just insane. So I feel like there's not going to be any real people in the audience. I think everyone is a scalper. So I'm expecting to see loads of like shifty figures with like long jackets outside trying to sell like tickets. And then like,
why the long jackets? Are you going? I'm just getting like some terrible 90s like sci-fi hero kind of image,
you know,
now
Recess,
with the long jacket.
You know, in Recess, the guy that sells all the stuff in the playground and his jacket, there's going to be scalpers outside. And that's what I picture them as.
Still, you have definitely gone back to the 90s showing off our age, being like, Recess. Oh, my God. Actually, I loved that show.
Yeah. But, oh, my God. This is purely a millennial podcast, by the way.
Yeah, pretty much
painfully,
is.
Painfully millennial. But Becca, your news.
My news. I was in Paris. Finally. Finally, I got to go after a really long time of waiting, and it was just beautiful. I went with my boyfriend, Matteo, and which was hilarious in itself because he's Italian. And there seems to be just some rift between the Italian and French like this.
It's very, we were talking about this yesterday. It's very, very the same brand as Irish and English, where we get along, but there's some mutiny underneath the surface.
Yeah. It was really funny. Just so funny. But anyway, I finally got to go to Paris, and not the same as you. I wouldn't live there.
Oh, you're wrong.
But I would live in Shakespeare and Co. I'm not even joking. I would move into that bookshop in a heartbeat. And do you know what? Reading those books would just give me enough sustenance to live. I wouldn't need food anymore. I just need the books.
Well, you do know the story of Shakespeare and Co. with Sylvia Beach, that she used to house writers in there, and they would bed and board, and they still do. They bed and board for free to work on their novels while working in the shop to keep it open. And it's a really cool time to go because it's the centenary year of Ulysses.
Yes.
And Sylvia Beach is the woman who made herself bankrupt in order to publish the James Joyce novel. So she's really iconic. So Becca, your next stop must be the Museum of Literature Ireland. So
yes, I must go up.
You can continue your lovely studies on Sylvia Beach because she's a fucking legend. Also, me and Becca argued, if you have been to Paris and you have been to Shakespeare and Company and you're a bookworm, you've probably also been to the Abbey Bookshop.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I did like it.
It's much better. It's I love you, Sylvia Beach, but the Abbey is like... The owner is in the shop all the time. It's like a real off the tourist track bookshop. And I would recommend there more than I would recommend Shakespeare and Co. for people going. Obviously, you have to see both for the fact that it's Shakespeare and Co. But if you're going to buy a book, buy one to get the stamp in Shakespeare and Co. and then run over to the Abbey and get yourself a first edition copy of whatever novel is your dreams. Because I feel like he only really stocked first edition as well, which is really cool. Other than Yeah, other than the classic edition classics. Yeah, I got a really cool Little Women an illustrated copy that has like this blue ink in it. Like, we love you, Paris. Je t'aime.
Yeah. But no, I did love it. It was Shakespeare and Co. was one of the highlights. Apart from all the walking that we did, because my knee is banjaxed after Paris. Like once it kind of gets around 6 p.m., my knee starts flaring up and I actually need to take painkillers. So this is now me worrying that this is finally old age hitting. At the age of 26, the old age has started to kick in and it's devastating.
I'm still young, bitch. TikTok keeps me Gen Z-ing.
Girl, we're the same age. We're the same age.
I'm decided that you may be cleverer. You may be wiser. I have decided I am much younger, infinitely younger. That's my only like one up
on you. You're just reminding me of Matteo whenever I remind him, like, there's about a year and a half between us in age, but his birthday's in March, my birthday's in July. So there's those few months where he's 2 years older than me. And as soon as it hits midnight on his birthday, I'm like, you're 2 years older than me, blah, blah, blah. He has now started going that he's still 25 because he's not counting the COVID years.
If we decided as a nation to collectively do that, like just not count COVID, I don't think anyone's going to complain. He's starting a revolution.
The thing is though, what I'm thinking is that someone, if you didn't count your COVID years, so let's say I'm taking off, you know, 2 years, so I'm 24 again. And imagine then someone, you're telling them like in a few years time going like, oh, I'm 34, but I should be 36. And they're like, you look awful for your age.
No.
Imagine that's
not gonna happen, baby. It's skincare central.
I take care of my skin and yet the skin betrays me at times.
All I'm thinking is I can look old as the now 24 year old I've decided I am. That's fine. But I get to go see things in Europe like Versailles for free. So am I complaining? No, I not at all. Oh,
I know. I was devastated. I just missed the cutoff. I was like, below 26, I was like, damn you.
It's a bit sickening.
It is. It's sickening when you're just like, oh my God, I'm viewed as an adult. Do you know? I think I'm now in the box. You know, when you have to tick things, you're like 26 to 33 or something. Devastating.
Oh my God. In some of them, it's like 25 to 45. And that's when you really feel your soul die.
Yeah. Honestly. Do we just talk about how old we are? A lot. I think so. But anyway.
Yeah, we do.
We get into books.
Yeah.
Can I also mention, before we get into it, we didn't actually have our usual half an hour to like hour long chat before we started recording because we met up yesterday. So
yes, the Grim Readers were reunited.
Yeah. So maybe we're going to be more full of energy today while recording.
Probably not, but that's fine. They'll take what they can get.
And as well, we got beautiful Winnie the Pooh mugs because we're Winnie the Pooh stans. Love Winnie the Pooh.
We're Disney adults. Oh my god.
That's the title of the episode. Right. Well, I send you my book.
Yeah. I imagine I was just like, no.
No.
I don't want to talk about books on this podcast anymore.
And that's when I kick Nikki out of the episode altogether.
So this book. Software update is ready to install. No, thank you. Okay. Oh, I have to put in my passcode. Okay. This book None of This Is Serious by Catherine Persifka.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. Now, this book I've seen everywhere, just only the past few weeks. I didn't see a hype for this coming out. And
what?
Then
I saw so much hype for this book.
I didn't see it at all. And then I saw it in Easton's one day with my mom. And then I saw it everywhere from that day forward. It was like one of those ones that once it hit publication day, it like just skyrocketed, which is kind of strange. Usually there's a build that I'll spot. But anyway, there's a review on this cover by Nisha Dolan. And it says it is an extraordinary novel. Nisha Dolan is the writer of Exciting Times, which I covered on this podcast a while ago. And to be honest, the cover of None of This Is Serious is very in that reminiscent, like, you know, the millennial post Sally Rooney phase.
I actually really like this cover, I have to say.
I do too, but it is like, the color is so unique. We've got like a lilac going on, and I
don't really see lilac covers, and I'm like, I am here for this.
And the best thing is that it's lilac and red, so it's really cool. So we get the usual millennial kind of faceless blob imagery that we all know and love.
Faceless like blob, it's a faceless person.
Yeah, but they're all like, they're rude. All drawn in blobs.
A blob.
They're all drawn in blobs. Listen to me.
Sorry, but like if someone first me as a blob, I'd be so insulted. I'm like,
but
am
that's
I a
the way
shapeless
it's drawn.
A shapeless like monster.
Becca,
it is not a blob. It's a person.
I'm not
person.
Listening to you. This is how it's drawn. It's the blob artwork.
It's a woman.
Of the 2015 post literature millennial pissed off at the world, unlikable female character. This is her. This is the mood. It's the blobs.
We're going to have to disagree because I'm just, do you know what I'm picturing is, do you know those monsters that are just like completely like made of jelly or something? I'm picturing that. When you say blob, that's what I'm picturing. And I'm like,
I mean, blob as in there's no outline and there's no detail. It is an illusion.
No. I think that kind of speaks of my own self-esteem when if someone called me a blob, that's what I would picture. But yeah. Anyway, go on. Describe the cover.
None of This Is Serious. Catherine Persifka. There is this broken, it's almost like it could be a mirror. It could be a picture frame. Either way, there's this effect of broken glass. And through the broken glass, we're seeing, I'd say she's like, 20 something woman in like lovely kind of bobbed hair in a red jumper, and I'm trying to decide right now whether it's a mirror or whether it's a portrait, but I think it's a mirror. So the title None of This Is Serious is I really like it, first of all. So I think this book is 100% a female protagonist who is disillusioned, jaded, self-deprecating. She is not living her best life right now. She is working in, I think she's just finished university, and she's gotten a job and in kind of a corporate world, and she's definitely like the youngest in the office. This really feels like a fluke job for her. She's one of the only people in her year who's kind of graduated into a position that isn't an internship. She's earning a salary for the first time.
Which interns really should earn a salary.
Oh, yeah. Oh, where it doesn't even need to be said. Like what the fuck?
Don't do unpaid internships. I'm sorry. How are you expecting someone to live?
Yeah, I thought you were telling people not to go for an unpaid internship.
No. Like, No. I'm saying to companies, like, how are you expecting someone to live?
Just like, unpaid labor just isn't a vibe. So she's disillusioned. She's working in an office. She's not feeling herself right now. And she's really on the self-sabotage route. And the one thing with this book and with the direction I'm going is I feel like this is just a big literary trope right now. Where I'm going. So I'm already kind of being like, oh, I'm a bit bored of this story that I'm reading. But this is what the cover screams to me. It's that it's the millennial trope of like, I hate myself. I want to make my life worse before it gets any better. So to change this novel up, I think she's in this job, she's on a warpath with herself, and she is really, really just like running herself dry. I think her boss, instead of being the usual creep that we're used to in like shocking. Promising young women.
Utterly shocking.
Yeah. Instead of him being an absolute creep, he is a really, really, really exceptionally kind man. And I think he notices that she is just about turning up to work, that the longer the weeks go by, she's looking after herself less and less. And even though maybe her productivity in work has gone up and she's done wonders for the company because she has been sucking every bit of her soul out to do it, he is in a board meeting as they're praising her, and he decides very, very last minute and very unexpectedly to actually fire her. So
what?
She's
so he
shook.
Was an asshole the whole time.
No, because he's got his reasons. So she's completely shook. She has torn herself apart for this job, and she cannot believe that she's been fired. There's nothing she could have done more. She's immediately going in to plead for her job back and saying how much it means to her. And when she says that this job is my whole life, that's when he cuts her off and he says, that's exactly why I need to let you go. You're 24 and you need something more.
Sorry, and this is like idealistic boss that wants to put you first. That never happens.
He's even
it's
better.
Like use and abuse.
No, he's even better than that. So she's looking at him, a rich man, and being like, okay, my life is easier now because I don't have a stream of income. I have nothing to do with myself every day. And he says that she's been terminated from the position, but he is happy to still send her paychecks week to week, provided that she looks after herself. Yeah,
girl,
I know.
You are just going into full on fiction. No boss would ever do this. You're like, you no longer work for this company, but I'm still going to pay you for what?
Yeah, no, he is.
Red flags are screaming.
Oh, the red flags
are
there. But I think the reason is, I think this man is like, I think he's recently lost a daughter to something serious. Maybe his daughter went and tried to do like criminal law in LA and got herself in loads of trouble from putting her work first. And he sees her in this girl and he wants to stop it happening. But he's an idealist and she's a cynic. And I think the events of what go down are just as catastrophic as the way she was working her job. So he's kind of trying to just tell her like, oh, go for nice walks, go on a holiday, here's some money. But she's got an awful lot of introspective work to do. There's a reason she is feeling the way she is. And money, though, it could massively help her. She's not able to use it in the way she should be to actually make any change because no one's actually helping her solve the problem. She needs therapy. This is my guess. Becca's
okay,
livid.
I'm just like
there's steam coming out of her ears.
I think you're thinking of this idealistic world where
yes.
bosses actually care about. And I'm not saying that all bosses, because I have a wonderful boss. I have a wonderful boss.
Not all bosses.
Who would care. But if I was let go, I wouldn't still be receiving money from the company because I don't work there anymore. So yeah, it's just, and there's so many red flags. I'm like, he wants something from you. This is a sugar daddy situation.
No, he's a good man, Becca. He's a good man. The one of the only good men.
I'm not buying it. But anyway, None of This Is Serious by Catherine Pacifica. You were a little bit right at times, kind of the qualities of the book. Plot, completely wrong. completely wrong, which I think from my interjections, as you were guessing, was pretty obvious.
You did interrupt me.
At least it was me interrupting you for once, because it's nearly always the other way around. But anyway,
this is true.
None of This Is Serious revolves around Sophie. Now, you were quite right. She is a young Gen Z. I think she's 22, so she's probably Gen Z rather than millennial.
Okay. Is she a Disney adult?
No, I wouldn't think so. But Sophie, so she is 22. She has literally just graduated from studying political science in UCD. And for once, I was actually really pleased. I'm fairly certain it was UCD and it wasn't Trinity, that it actually wasn't revolving around Trinity, because that just seems to be the only college in Ireland. And you know what? I bet you as soon as this is, I'm going to check as soon as this is over, it's probably Trinity, but I'm fairly certain it was UCD. And do you know what? I was, do you know, even if it just means that, you know, you're showcasing that there's two colleges in Ireland, at least it's not just Trinity now. All right.
And then there
I was
is
quite
only one
pleased.
city in Ireland. There is only Dublin, if you didn't know. There
Okay.
is
The way
Dublin
you
and the
said that,
Shtick.
there's no hint of sarcasm. People are going to take away from this. There's only one city in Ireland. My God, how
Yeah.
small. No, that's incorrect. But anyway, Sophie, you are definitely right. She is lost. She has graduated and just feels like she's being completely left behind by everybody else. They've all gotten jobs. They all know what they want to do, and Sophie's complete opposite. In the sense that it's not only that she doesn't know what she wants to do, she doesn't know who she is, really. She's had, you kind of see, it's not quite jealousy, but or envy, but she just sees all her friends and they're so, I don't know, strong in their sense of self. Do you know, that, you know, they're confident enough that they can be outspoken or things like that, whereas Sophie just doesn't feel any way remotely like that. Do you know, I mean, you'll see there's shockingly low self-esteem as the book goes on. So I mean, I view it more that she's having an identity crisis as well as kind of trying to figure out what she wants to do with her life, with kind of pressure being added on from all sides, kind of going like, you kind of need to get a job or like decide what to do. And the thing is, though, she can't get a job. She's literally applying to jobs the whole time, and they're either sending back rejections or she never hears from them. So it's not like she doesn't try, she does. It's just, yeah. So we're having this kind of identity crisis, and at the start of the book, she's at a party, and suddenly there's like this big boom sound, I think, if I remember rightly, and a crack appears in the sky. This massive
Oh
crack.
shit.
Yeah, this, I was not prepared for this, and I thought it was such an
Oh
interesting part of the book. This crack appears in the sky, and this is where the lilac cover comes from, because it's a purple lilac crack that appears in the sky.
my
And
God.
it's insane. So anyway, this crack is there throughout the entire book. And we kind of see, you know, at the start how, you know, our world suddenly jumps on it, and it becomes the news every day, in and out. It's everybody's obsession. And Sophie, you know, reads everything on it, and things like that. So I kind of get it. I mean, as the book goes on, we kind of see that the crack, that switch kind of, you know, when people get bored of something or the world moves on, it just becomes like, oh, this part of our everyday lives now,
It's
this
kind of
crack.
reminded me of have you watched Don't Look Up, the
No, I
Netflix
haven't.
documentary?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I keep saying it's a documentary. It's not
Yeah, it's fairly much a film, yes.
yeah. But like that whole thing, like the just the disillusionment, like it's we talk about it for a week and then it's like, oh yeah, the
Yeah,
meteorite that's
and the thing
coming
is,
to
you're like,
crash
this
Earth.
is a crack in the sky. But anyway, as well, what I asked you, and I made a point of this, it Catherine Prisivka, she completely, absolutely gets the absurdity of our world, or you know, humankind, because she writes about this billionaire sending a car through the crack. And do you know what? If anything sums up billionaires, that's that.
It was like I love the way it's like a strange billionaire sends a car through a crack and you're meant to picture it as anyone except Elon Musk.
Yeah. I was literally like, of course.
He
Could they
buys a
put,
social media company as well.
you
Ooh, who
know,
could it
so I
be?
mean, there's a lot of theories about this crack throughout the book. You know, a lot of people are putting it down to the environment and our climate crisis, which you could kind of see that other people kind of, when I looked at reviews, they kind of were like, oh, it's a metaphor for, you know, Sophie's internal world and all that kind of thing. I mean, you can look at it a lot of different ways. I mean, there's kind of, Sophie does talk about like conspiracy theories. Do you know,
excellent.
Of course there's conspiracy theories. But it was such, I wasn't expecting this kind of completely different thing. It actually made me more interested in the book because I did, like, I kind of thought, I was like, okay, this is going to be a millennial. She's unhappy with her life. And then this crack happens. So I was like, do you know what?
I love when a book just absolutely, like, something happens and you're like,
I was
this has never happened
it.
Before.
I know. I was so intrigued. I was like, oh my God. But anyway, back to the plot of the book. As I mentioned, Sophie reads everything on the crack. But in general, she is completely obsessed with everything online, social media. It is literally, where's the quote actually? It is her world, pretty much. And it is, let me see. I think I put the quote in my review. Let me get that.
Okay.
She is just, I refresh the feed every minute and continue to consume, growing fat. I'm like a vampire leeching off the content of other people's lives. I'm not even really interested in anything I'm reading.
Oh.
Do you know, it's literally a kind of, and I think we've all gone through that of kind of, you know, going online is kind of passing the time. But for her, it's like she's completely absorbing all the information so that at any given time she can, if someone asks her a question, she can go through this kind of encyclopedia of what's in her mind and go through it. And it's I saw it as kind of this lack of self-belief that she doesn't think that she can have opinions of her own.
Yeah, like she doesn't believe in original thought almost.
Exactly. She doesn't trust herself. And the thing is, though, as the book goes on, we can see a lot of characters telling her like she is incredibly smart. Mm-hmm. Do you know? And she is really, really intelligent. She just doesn't believe that of herself. And that's, again, that's kind of whole very low self-image that she has. But yeah, the online stuff, it is pretty much a commentary of our generation throughout a lot of the book. I mean, we even get into, we see Sophie really suffers from anxiety. Mm-hmm. And she is really so hyper aware of her future and if she'll ever be able to afford a house. And I was like, oh,
that hits a little close to home.
Don't we all think of that? So I mean,
there's like loads of articles this week specifically, I don't know why, of like, what would happen if you stopped spending your money on lattes?
That's because didn't you see, well, one that's kind of
It's like the don't buy a millennials buying avocado toast thing is back.
But did you see, I think it's as well spurred on by the Independent article that went up during the week of a guy from UCD and he bought a house and was able to sell it for like 750,000. And there people commenting being like, no one mentions that his father is a property developer.
Oh my God.
Sorry,
a house like growing and that kind of value, like for him to buy it cheap just to sell it, that's also fucked up. Like,
I don't think he bought it cheap. Like, I know apparently he renovated and all that, but like it's right by UCD apparently, and you're just like, yeah, sure, that was a cheap house. But anyway, sorry, getting back into it. So she has a very low self-esteem, and we kind of see, we find out that she's a twin. Again, another element added. She's a twin, and her twin Hannah, she views Hannah as the more successful. I'm fairly certain it's Hannah. I read this like last week, and can I remember all the characters' names? That's just, again, old age.
Old age.
But Hannah, she views Hannah as the more successful twin, and we kind of see that there has been some serious bullying going on in that relationship. She doesn't delve into it that much. We kind of get glimpses of like very graphic childhood trauma of like Hannah pushing her down the stairs when she was young and then being like, oh, she tripped. So this like low self-esteem is not only her own kind of image of like Hannah's her better, but Hannah also putting her down. So, you know, she kind of views herself as not smart enough, not thin enough. I mean, huge warning, there's a lot of fat phobia in this book.
Oh.
And the thing is, though, apparently, you know, she actually is quite thin, and you're like, oh my god, okay, completely warped self of what she looks like. Now, there is a lot about I wrote down romance. I don't view this as a romance through the book, but
oh, no.
Sophie has been in love.
No.
Sophie has been in love with a friend of hers since they started college, Finn. Now, Finn, I never liked him. I thought he was a bit of a dickhead. He's just so full of himself, and he just uses Sophie as like his, he strings her along. He's going out with all these other girls. He's breaking other people's hearts, and he just leads her on, and nothing's happening between them, and it's just horrible. And then she meets this guy online that apparently she met at a party, she can't remember him, and what begins there is kind of a budding potential romance, but she's so insecure in herself, I think, that she kind of writes in the book that she doesn't want to move that relationship offline.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, and she kind of has a hard time with that. So that kind of progresses, and we get to, I'm not gonna want to give this away, but the issue of consent does come up. And there is a particular incident in the book that is quite graphic. It's towards the end. I'd say it's about 75% through the way through the book this incident happens, and we kind of watch how there's misogyny and violence towards women. And again, I think this is more of the culture in Ireland, you know, as we call it, the lad culture, of thinking like it's for their own personal enjoyment. Do you know, a girl is completely up for it. You know, consent is given in that way, but no, it's really, really not.
No.
And because everything has been quite online, we see how the victim of abuse can be completely gaslit and undermined and just completely abused online and in person as well. But it's just horrific. It is absolutely harrowing. And the thing is, though, this does happen to a particular character, but it's so real in the sense that I think we've all seen threads of people bashing people online and being like, oh my God, they're lying, and all this kind of stuff. And it's so real life that I think this book does capture this Irish culture very well. And it's not just Ireland, it's worldwide, but I absolutely see this happening. I mean, we've all seen something like this, and it's just horrific.
I know, and like the fact, like, for how much is in this book, it feels very real as well. Cause like I think if you went back 30 years and like told someone in the 90s everything that was happening in the news in 2020, that like there's a pandemic, there's a war, there's inflation, like that's all these like earth-shattering things, kind of like a crack appearing in the sky. Yet like you live through all of these history, like historical events, all the while putting up with that kind of stupid shit that like we have to fix this crack in the sky, and we can't even like treat each other with fucking human decency.
No.
And oh, the fact I love that kind of, I love when an author can do that, when they can have like this big massive scale event like a crack in the sky, and they can also draw your interest to all of the like the still really important injustices happening in between.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it sounds amazing. I really want to read this.
I was like, when I started reading this, I was like, should I tell Nikki not to get this? Because I feel like she's probably already reading it while I'm reading it.
I picked it up in the shop and I can't remember why I put it down. And I can't remember reading the blurb either.
See, the blurb does not give anything away about this. Like the crack is a complete like, whoa. But I would say I think the guys in this book, I think her friend Dan, who moves to London, fairly certain he was gay, absolutely loved him. But the rest of the guys, all the straight guys, I was like, I hate all of you, you pieces of shit. You know, I mean, there's this whole character who's like, oh, I respect women and I'm woke, and like, I'll totally call out my guy friends. Let's say that was bullshit. But anyway, sorry, I'm getting so angry about that character. I literally was like, if I could stab like if I had a physical copy, I was like, I feel like I'd go in and actually like cross out where his name appears. Anyway. So it is a really interesting book. I mean, there is, sorry, going into so much with this book, but it, I felt like there were so many different levels to it. There's even like a small bit whenever she's like, I mean, she's sexually active, but when she's having sex, she does talk about, you know, growing up Catholic and this Catholic guilt, shame kind of put in mm-hmm. about sex and like how she's meant to feel dirty. But actually she's like, I enjoy sex more because I feel like I'm doing something wrong. And I mean, the fact is like, you can see that as humor, but it's also like, how horrible is it that we make girls feel like this? Do you know, it's not guys. Oh, no. They're just told like, don't get her pregnant. But it's women that are made to feel like, oh, you're dirty, or oh, she tape, you know, the tape analogy that's in this book. Do you know that when she was in school, a group of 10 girls were put up with a guy and they were all wrapped together with tape. And the more, you know, highlighting like the more times you have sex, the less like you are to find a real attachment to someone. So the tape, when the last girl, God, it wouldn't stick. And I was just, ew, like, that's absolutely disgusting. Do you know? And I think we all have stories of like stuff we went through in school, but I'm just kind of like, how shameful is it, do you know, that that's the environment that we've created and could actually create lifelong problems for someone in terms of intimacy?
Yeah. And it's most people, again, that's why it's so bizarre. It's one of those problems that just sounds so fucking stupid and avoidable. Mm. And then you realize that, like, oh, most people feel like this. This has happened to most of Ireland's youth. Like, this is how we feel, all for really stupid, pointless reasons.
So it's, I mean, she does highlight a lot of things that are in our culture that I'm just like, yeah, this is a really ugly side of, you know, online, you know, living, you know, being online, or lad culture, or, you know, this whole kind of growing up in a Catholic environment and with sex. But it is, it's, I really enjoyed some of the conversations in it. And I know I saw a few people being like, oh, I wanted her to delve into it more, but I'm like, she's highlighting it and showing it in a character. Like, not everything can be a deep down discussion on something, but
and not every, like, sorry, it's one of those things, it's like when we delete our news apps every couple of months, like, we're not made for this much information.
No.
There's too much to worry about today.
No, and I mean, the book will get too long. But the really interesting thing as well with how it's written is the narration. Everybody else's conversation towards Sophie, or even around Sophie, is all in quotation marks. Anything Sophie says, I actually, at the beginning, I thought it was actually internal dialogue, until kind of people are responding to her. I'm like, wait, did she actually speak out loud?
So, oh my God.
It's really interesting. So it's kind of, it was just fascinating, this kind of how she writes dialogue. So, I mean, you're actually kind of assuming or making assumptions about what she's saying by what is kind of written out, or like how mm-hmm. people respond. But you're actually, again, I think it was also kind of, you know, if we're going into looking at it deep down, is kind of showing that Sophie doesn't view herself, you know, that low self-esteem, that she doesn't view that she's good enough to make.
And that speak her words out loud. Are even worth notating down, like.
So it's, I mean, we do see what she says, because I always thought it was internal. It was just very interesting, and I saw some people saying it was really irritating, but I thought it was actually kind of fascinating, and I felt it was a really kind of interesting way of kind of showing Sophie's own viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But very interesting book. I will say there's probably a few bits in it that I was like, okay, I'm not smart enough to understand this.
There's not a lot of hope for the rest of us.
it's just kind of, you know, those pretentious banter things, and I'm like, I'm not really fussed of keeping track of what's going on here. Do you know when they're like, I'm showing off how smart I am? And oh, I was, and like
they use like six syllable words instead of like, oh yeah,
I was like, I, oh come on, like, I don't want to talk like that.
Oh, but, that happens in every form of life. Actually, like in jazz, if you gig jazz in Ireland, you will inevitably meet someone in the pub who will come up to you and be like, yeah, I really liked when you used that like flat seventh dominant on the Locrian scale. And you're like, oh, no.
You'd be like, thanks. Yes, I was just doing what I felt.
Yeah, but I didn't notice, sir.
To talk a little bit about Catherine Prisivka, because I actually haven't done a little author bio. This is on Canongate, which I'm fairly certain are probably the publishers. Catherine Prisivka was born in Dublin in 1996. She's actually younger than us. And I'm just like, wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God. She studied English literature at Trinity College Dublin and has an MLit in fantasy from the University of Glasgow. So kind of, I think, where the crack in the sky comes in. She has competed in both the European Debating Championships and the World Championships.
Oh.
Yeah, go on, girl.
Fair
She's
play.
Obsessed with learning about how stories work and has ruined nearly all of her favourite books and movies by overanalyzing them. Girl, she works as a creative writing teacher in Dublin, and this is her debut novel.
Go
now,
her.
What I feel really, really angry about is that she is the sister-in-law of Sally Rooney.
Oh, no way.
And pretty much every review I've read mentions that fact. And compares
to be honest,
their work.
Yeah, it's awful getting your work compared. To be honest, I get telling people because that's so what a small
I think what I'd say is I'd be like, okay, if you enjoy conversations with friends,
them saying aloud that she's related to Sally Rooney, that's like amazing. I'm like, oh my God, Ireland is so weird. But yeah, no, like it's the whole like the new Sally Rooney. When that's said, it's mind-numbing.
What I feel angry about, I mean, I think this is just a general trend that I've kind of talked about with any Irish female writer, is that they're just always compared to Sally Rooney. And I think it's wrong. It's so wrong. And I think especially with Catherine Prisivka, they probably have a very good, I'm hoping they have a really good relationship, but you're there kind of going, she's her own person in her own right.
Yeah. And I understand, I think, to be honest, Sally Rooney has kind of joined the likes of like Gillian Flynn, Dan Brown. Mm. It's one of those monumental like moments in literary fiction that like kind of moves the way publication works going forward, and more of that kind of that genre storytelling just opens up to a wider audience, and there's more, you feel like there's more books in a similar genre because it's spiked in popularity and whatever. So of course, like, I think it's normal to mention an Irish contemporary fiction writer writing characters in their early 20s, just out of college, just out of UCD. I think it's normal to mention Sally Rooney in that conversation, like we did earlier, you know, like the Sally Rooney kind of post Sally Rooney world. But then to, like, I hate it's when they say like the new Sally Rooney, and they kind of it's like they pit, instead of like just being comparative, like kind of organically, and going like, oh yeah, this book, if you liked this, you'd also like this, because it's instead they pit them against each other, and it's like, who is the real Sally Rooney?
Yeah, because I mean, the thing is, so I mean, when I was reading it, I was like, I was shocked that you hadn't read it, because I was like, if you liked Snowflake, you'd love this, like Snowflake by Louise Neeland.
Yeah, and again,
I was like,
it's
like this genre of books, I'm like, if you like these, I feel like you'd enjoy this, rather than just saying, ah, she's like really similar to Sally Rooney, because she isn't, because her dialogue, it's all very different. Like plot wise, yes, we've got that thing, but it's not Sally Rooney. And I just, yeah, I was disappointed. But can I put in some content warnings just in case this review makes people want to go and read this? So content warnings, we've got sexual assault, sexual harassment, a little bit of sexual
dread.
Existential dread, identity crisis, anxiety, a bit of depression. We have
a little sprinkle.
We have a bit of online abuse. We've got a bit of fat phobia, alcohol. Oh, geez, a lot of drinking in this book. Kind of self loathing a little bit. So, I mean, there are a lot of heavy topics in this book, but I still really enjoyed it. I give it about 7 out of 10, I think.
Nice.
So it's one that I'm just still shocked that you didn't pick it up. I'm just like,
I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I didn't, because this review makes me want to read it far more than the blurb did. So I feel like it's going to jump up my reading list.
The blurb did not do this book justice. I think it's a lot more intriguing and I think deeper than what the blurb made it sound
All I remember about the blurb, because I don't remember the context of it, I picked up the book in Easons and I actually put it back down because I thought it was very like young adult fiction and I was like, yeah, I'm not in the mood for that right now. Whereas this doesn't feel young adult. This feels this feels like something totally up my alley. And the fact that the blurb didn't grab me and the book is this like intensely what I'm looking for is really strange. Like, cause now I'm like, why didn't I buy the book?
Yeah, it's just, I'm after reading the blurb on Goodreads, I'm like, yeah, I just didn't quite, I mean, it gets into the whole like online thing, but I'm just like, it's very intriguing, this book. I'm excited to see what she kind of does next. And I have to say, actually, when I was in Shakespeare and Co, they actually had this book.
Oh, I love that.
I hadn't read it yet, but they had this book.
I love that.
So, yeah. Wow. Anyway, that is my review. Apologies. That was a really long one, but there was a lot to delve into there.
Oh, no. I think we've all gone and I think we're all going to add that book to our to-be-read lists now. That review was needed. Okay, I'm going to send you mine.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen this anywhere.
I actually have. This is one that I saw in Shakespeare and Co, pulled it out and then put it back in because I remembered that you'd read it.
Yeah. I bought this in Charlie Burns.
Go on.
Yeah.
Irish shop.
Yeah. Bought this up in Galway.
Charlie Burns. I actually love Kenny's as well. Kenny's do, if you need a recommendation, Irish independent bookshops, support them. Support all independent bookshops, but Kenny's is fab. I will always, my heart will always belong to O'Mahony's because of my own personal connection with it. Charlie Burns, there's some amazing ones around the country as well. That, you know what? It'll be my mission.
Five subscribes.
It'll be my mission to visit all independent bookshops in Ireland. And you know what? After saying that, I'm now kind of regretting it because I'm probably imagining it's going to take my whole life into the review. Into my completely made up story. Other People's Clothes by Kala Henkel. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Henkel. It is a very interesting one. It is kind of this, is it more of a pinky red or a red
it's
kind of color?
Kind of, yeah, it's leaning pinkish red. It's very like cherry.
Okay. We're going to say it's got a cherry border. And in the background, we have this photo. I'm going to say it's giving me Polaroid vibes of this woman with her hair being swept across her face by the wind. We don't get to see her any part of her face bar the nose and below. And it's kind of this, I'm going to say early morning kind of sunrise vibes. But it's a little bit of a creepy photo. I have to say, I found it a little bit creepy. And then on top of that, then in yellow is Other People's Clothes. And there is a review, Thrilling, from Cosmopolitan. That gives me nothing. So, okay, Other People's Clothes. Do you know, I knew you were doing this book because you told me that you were going to do this book. And now that I've seen the cover, I had kind of an idea in my mind last night of what I was going to talk about. And now that I've seen the cover and seen kind of, I think it looks a bit creepy, I think I have to go for a different one.
Oh, interesting.
So... okay, we're just going to go for characters who have really shockingly low self-esteem today.
It's the vibe
of the fiction we read. I think that says more about us that we're reading books with really low self-esteem characters going, yeah.
Girl, it's 2022. These books outnumber fiction or fantasy fiction by like 10 to 1.
Okay. I'm going to say that we are in somewhere in the States. I don't view it as being set in Ireland. And we're going to go to a really rural town. not even going to attempt to come up with a name for something because it's going to be utter madness. But it's going to be in the state of like... Indiana.
Oh, very nice.
You're getting the reference to our conversation yesterday.
Yeah, very nice.
This is for Emmett. It's in Indiana. And I'm going to say that we're seeing a character who has been completely, I'm going to say, horrifically bullied through school. She has a shockingly low self-esteem, but also that she feels like she's never been loved properly. I'm going to say that her parents are addicts and she is literally waiting. She has in her mind, I'm going to say that she's 16. She has in her mind that she can't run away until she's 18. She needs to be a legal adult, but I'm going to say that something happens, either like at the very start of the book, either that her father attacks her, and I'm going to say attacks her in a sexual way, and that, you know, this whole issue of like, oh, you need to learn how to be a real woman and it's time for that kind of, and that she sees that her mother wouldn't in any way stop this happening. And I think that spurs her to literally run away in the middle of the night. And, you know, I think as soon as she kind of, I'm going to say that she gets one of those, is it Greyhound buses or something like that?
Yeah.
And
the scary ones from Wife of the Murder.
She gets on one of those and I think she's going to head to LA. We're going to get that. I'm going to find myself in LA. And I think we kind of see this sudden change as soon as she like sets foot on that bus that she's like, I can reinvent myself.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of travel and she arrives in LA and I think like she stands out because she looks so unhealthy. She's never been looked after properly. Like she looks sickly. And she's incredibly thin. She's not wearing fashionable clothes. I'm going to say that it is like they're dirty, like hygiene wise, not good. She's got very lanky blonde hair and she gets spotted by a talent person for modeling because he thinks that, you know, if she cleaned herself up, she would stand out. So already she thinks like this was the right decision. Mm-hmm. And we kind of see her as she goes forward that, you know, she kind of is put through this machine of kind of, you know, we're making you a better person. And she's viewing this kind of like she's being fixed.
Yeah.
And, you know, that these people finally care about her. And I mean, that's her internal monologue. But then on the outside, we're seeing like they don't give a crap, you know. And I'm going to say that she, you know, she starts getting photographed and she's doing really well because they, you know, people are saying she has a very haunted quality about her. You know, she's doing very well. So we are seeing as, you know, she's, I'd say, putting on other people's clothes because, I mean, she's a model now, of how she kind of reinvents herself with each kind of changing season of wardrobes, clothes and things like that. But
interesting
how she kind of reinvents herself. And I'm going to say to the point of kind of, she's not who she was at all. And I'm going to say that we kind of see how her, I'd say some incident happens that completely just brings back all her trauma or brings it to the forefront because trauma never goes away. Brings that trauma back to the forefront and we see her actually either having a complete mental breakdown or lashing out at everybody and this kind of whole issue of, you know, having, I think it probably is kind of a mental breakdown of that, you know, reinventing yourself or just, you know, putting on other people's clothes and going out and putting on a facade isn't going to fix the hurt or pain that someone is feeling. So I think, you know, it's in the end is we kind of probably see her going off somewhere to a psychiatric facility or a mental facility to actually get help. And, you know, that, So I'm going to go with, it's a very dark book. But yeah, that's my guess. I'm not going to go into it too much.
I like it. I think the title is kind of tricky, like Other People's Clothes is. When I picked it up, I was like, I don't really know what that means, like what's going to happen. But you kind of, like, you did get that element of it, that like she does kind of reinvent herself. And it,
well,
and
it was that with... or I could have gone serial killer version of that, like,
yes,
boom, chop the head off and I'm gonna take your clothes.
My answer would have been the same. You would have gotten the plot just as wrong, but I still would have wanted the book. I still would have wanted that book. So Other People's Clothes is so again, just to remind you, by Calla Henkel. This is one of my favorite reads of the year. It really, really surprised me how much I liked this book, because I found it a bit hard to get into in the beginning. So our main character is Zoe Beach. She is American. She is from California. And So we meet her right as she is moving to Berlin for college for a year abroad.
You know what? I got some plot points right. LA was involved in a little bit.
LA was
California. She does move. So, yeah, I mean, I'm giving myself some tick ticks there.
Yeah. She's moving to Berlin for art college. And that's an interesting point for later on anyway. But we kind of very quickly find out why this like massive move needs to happen for her. And she's actually trying to run away from the pain of her best friend who was recently murdered.
No. Yeah,
I know, it's already heartbreaking. So she's moving to Berlin, and she finds another student who is also American who's moving over as well, called Haley. And they get in contact, Zoe and Haley, because obviously, you know, that's gonna help them out. Two Americans in a European city for the first time. They decide to go and rent together. So Haley is a total oddball, where Zoe is very kind of guarded, obviously, for what's happened, and very kind of introverted, shy, quiet. Haley seems to have none of these setbacks and is very vocal. She's obsessed with Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears and pop culture. She loves Warhol and really wants to kind of become that kind of legacy in the art world. And she's obsessed with Amanda Knox.
Oh, what?
This is going to be a theme. So I thought this was really cool, because I would have grown up around the time of that trial, like we all did. And I just thought it was, a really mad kind of an insert. And my brain, the second I heard that, started like rapping. I was like, oh my God, is this going to be a thing? Because, you know, Zoe's best friend was murdered. Is she going to like try and get involved in the case? Da, da, da. And then like, oh, just wait. So they look for an apartment in Berlin, and they find like kind of, I think it's something like a Craigslist ad. I can't remember if it's Craigslist.
Dodgy.
They found this like really beautiful apartment right in Berlin, and it's not that expensive. It's really quirky. So like there's like exposed brick walls. There's like a couch, nice, and just a pair of lips. So they go in, and you know, like they're art students. They're like, this could be such an interesting vibe for us, like this could be really cool. So they go and view the place, and they meet the landlord, and the landlord is very eccentric. Her mother is with her. Her name is Beatrice, and they find out she's a crime thriller writer. She's a novelist with like multiple best-selling books. And Haley kind of decides as they get into the apartment, like, oh my God, this is our apartment now. We have to do anything to get here. And they're meeting the landlord, and Haley just blurts out and drops the bombshell that, oh, you know, Zoe's best friend was murdered. Kind of like it's just conversation fodder. And oh God, it's like you're immediately like, oh my God, what the fuck is wrong with Haley? Like, she's so intense. And then you feel horrible for poor Zoe, because she's sitting there like, oh my God, I'm not ready to talk about this. And it's really very tactless the way she brings it in. And it's a very strange moment, because even the way Beatrice reacts, it's not really sympathetic. It's very strange. So that's the first kind of weird
But it's that kind of thing of like, you know, when someone, like something very personal to you, and someone like brings it up. I mean, I've had this.
And a near stranger. Like,
And like, you're just like, it's just like talked about in front of you and you're not partaking because you're there kind of reliving this whole thing of going, what?
Yeah, and it's that like there was nothing horrible to lead the conversation that way. She just drops it. So obviously they have a confrontation and Hayley kind of apologizes and is like, look, she's a writer. She needs a story from us for us to stand out and get this place. I just really want this place. I'm really sorry. I didn't realize, I got carried away. And Hayley backs down and is kind of like, okay, look, we'll, you know, we did get the apartment in the end, like whatever. And they kind of get over it. The rent is great. They're really delighted with themselves. The only, like, there's only really one hitch with the apartment, and it's that it's very cold because it's like one of those AGA heaters and they have put coal on it. But everything else, they're delighted. They're really, really, really happy. And they start living their lives, and Berlin isn't really what they expected. They traveled like all the way over from the States, and they're only in college about 6 hours a week. So she's in this new city, doesn't speak the language, isn't really partaking in college. All her classes are in German. She's really disillusioned.
Oh, no.
And the two of them are a little bit shook about it, especially Zoe, our protagonist. And the focus of the novel goes away from art, and it's really just their apartment living. Like, they're watching Law and Order. They're getting really cheap takeaway. They're drinking loads of bottles of wine. And Hayley begins reading all of the landlord's books because she's got them all in the apartment. And this is when weird circumstances start happening, because Beatrice, the landlady, steps in a couple of times and has conversations with Zoe. So she just kind of pops up unannounced once or twice. And the things that she talks about and asks about are things that Beatrice shouldn't really know. And then Zoe starts to notice that things are kind of moving in the apartment. There's things missing. There's things being touched, and they realize that Beatrice, the landlady, is actually watching them. And this is when Hayley, in her obsession to be like fame, fortune, icon status, is like, oh my god, she's writing her next book about us. So this is when the two
that's not the reaction that I would have.
Yeah, I know, because like Zoe feels very like very, very
violation of privacy. Yeah,
violated. And Hayley is kind of like, look, we're not going to get another apartment. I think this could be the start of something for us. This could be our big break in the art world. So this is when they decide that they need to live their lives like true protagonists and give Beatrice, the writer, something interesting to write about. And all of a sudden, this really cozy, quaint apartment of theirs becomes a central hub for partying in Berlin. And that's where I'm going to leave you trickle and wonder what happens next. So this book is so, so interesting. There's a lot of moments that kind of happen and you're like, why is that happening? This is going a bit far. Is this believable? And then it's like, it's very, very good. It's a real thriller in the way that you don't really know what's going to happen next. And there's a lot of very, like, the things that happen and the things that go wrong are very strange and kind of multi-layered, and paranoia is there, and really, really, really cool. And Zoe is a very well-written character. She's got a very complicated version of grief, because obviously her best friend has been, you know, just murdered out of nowhere. It's she's not grieving a young person. It's her first death really that she's had to deal with, and it's so horrific and sudden. And she's still friends with the family. She's still friends with Chloe, or with Chloe. Zoe is still friends with her best friend's former boyfriend. And Zoe, we learn, has kind of reinvented herself around what her best friend used to be. And this is where the title Other People's Clothes comes in. Zoe has really lost herself, and being in a city as outrageous and you know, party centric as Berlin, it's quite easy for her to camouflage and go through all of these different roles. And it's, oh god, it's really, really great. Like, having an unhinged character like Hayley in the mix, and then like this like really creepy landlady, and then Zoe, who's just not able to look after herself right now. It's oh, it's very, very good. It's really cool. And I remember thinking, like, a lot of, you know, like, to write about kids in art college must be very strange if you haven't done art. And then I'm looking at the author's bio. Well, Kala Henke is a writer, a playwright, a director, and an artist who lives and works in Berlin. And that makes total sense because everything just feels very, like, it's authentic Berlin. It's authentic art student. It's very, very, very well done. And when you actually Google her bio, I was looking for her bio for the podcast, obviously. And when you Google her, the first thing that pops up is her art collection with Mats Pettigoff. And like, she has like major, like, international exhibitions. She's a big deal.
She's successful.
Yeah, and this is her debut novel.
Damn.
So I would have thought she had a background purely in English. English maybe with Irish or something, because she writes like a real, like, she is authentic thriller writer. I can't believe it's her first book. And this book sat at about a 6 or 7 out of 10. I just really enjoyed it. And then you get to the twist at the end, and this book is like, it suction cups to your mind and you'll never forget it. You're like, oh, this is so genius. Ooh. This is such a good,
just, I'm intrigued. I'm just gonna, my guess, which is gonna be completely wrong, is that Beatrix is the best friend's murderer. I'm just gonna put that out there.
I know I'm wrong. I can't even react because I don't want you to go into a blind, Becca. Maybe she is. If she isn't.
I mean, it would be such a coincidence that, you know, this really unusual, kind of creepy, well, very creepy crime thriller writer has, you know, traveled to California purposely just to murder this person and then ends up back in your life
really
again.
But it's really mad. Like, it's really, really mad because, like, that what happens in the final, like, you're probably through more than half of the book before you get any kind of explanations to all of the weird happenings. And then you get them and you think you know exactly where the book's going to go. And then it goes somewhere else. And then it goes somewhere else. And you're like, oh my God, it's really, really, really great. And it ties back with a lot of themes from the very beginning. She really, like, authentically kind of places the biscuit crumbs, and it ends up being a very tidy, very clever read without kind of feeling like she just packaged up the ending for the readers. Just the way that, you know, like, I love Thursday Murder Club, but that little trope of the end just being the, oh, and then everyone was fine. And like, we all love that. That's what we want in a lot of those thriller books. But the difference in this is that it does feel like maybe this is something that actually happened. Maybe this is something that's happening. And very cool. I'm not gonna ruin it anymore. I think I land on a bit like almost a 9 out of 10.
Oh, okay.
It did take me a little bit to get into it. I remember texting Chloe and saying, I don't know if I'm into this, but then I'm so glad I stuck it out. It's really, really, really great. So I totally recommend. If you liked the book I reviewed this time last year, People Like Her, the mommy blogger kind of thriller that I was really obsessed
with.
Yeah,
that cover was literally just giving me People Like Her vibes.
It's the same font, I'm pretty sure, now that I've said it. But what I like about it is both of those books were thrillers that just I didn't expect. And it was a really new angle. And that's how I feel about this. It's not at all anything like People Like Her, but it's that same. I got just as excited reading it.
The vibe, yeah.
It's very, very good.
Fascinating. I'm still just like completely hinged on those two really weird characters, Hayley and Beatrix. And I'm like,
Hayley, I was obsessed with Hayley. I was like, what is this?
She just seems
cracked. Langer gonna do next?
Oh God.
And I love that it's like Lindsay Lohan, like she's the one who's obsessed with Law and Order and makes Zoe watch it, which is horrible because Zoe is recovering from like her best friend being murdered.
That's just like, I don't care about your well-being. We're doing what I want to do. And you're like, this is very traumatic for me.
But Hayley just isn't doing it to be cynical and mean. She just does not see like what she's doing.
Oh, it's very self-obsessed.
Good. Yeah, very, very, very well written. Like just very, very, very good.
I think we covered actually two good books today.
Yeah, we did.
We had a lot to talk about. My God, maybe it actually works very well for us not to have the old chats beforehand. Because our energy was pretty good.
Yeah, and like we got that was like almost a tidy hour, like an hour 15.
Yeah, see, look at that. I'm going to give ourselves a big old pat on the back now.
We're very good.
Apologies to the old listeners who are like, oh my God, get over yourselves. And we're like, yeah, I feel that too. I feel that too. But yeah, interesting. Yeah. As always, if you want to recommend books that you'd like us to cover, please do. I must say, actually, my book is a NetGalley book. I did get that in advance. My review is completely honest and unbiased.
And so, thank you, Charlie Burns, for mine. I bought it off them. Go and support them. They're fab.
She gave them money. But yeah. So as always, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Goodreads, Storygraph, all that kind of stuff. Do interact with us. I kind of miss, you know, people telling us like, oh, well, again, we haven't published any episodes.
It's our own fault.
It's our own fault.
We've ignored the people.
But anyway, until next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.